The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, the big snooze. What is sleep? Why do we need it? And how can anybody possibly sleep when we could be listening to any one of the 144 episodes of this very podcast? Like that one where Captain Crinkle describes how she put the ringtone on iTunes and... Sorry, I just nodded off. Anyway, Dr. Christina McCray of the University of Missouri Sleep Research Lab is here to school us in all things slumberific. Also, here's something that could keep you up at night. We've got a brand new contest for you. And also, it's time for Mailbag Insider Edition. You're curious about us, and we have absolutely nothing to hide, except the identity of a certain celebrity shower partner. I'm Adam Felber, the man who tries to expertly guide this dreamy show through the REM cycle all the way to deeper and more restorative phases until the metaphorical cock crows. And now, please welcome the woman who is the conversational equivalent of an unmanageable cat who spends the entire night knocking random shit off your dresser and shelves. It's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, you guys. How are you? Good to hear your little voices.
Welcome, Poundstone.
Hey, Adam, and thanks to tonight's house band cellist Adam Fisher. Adam Fisher, that is, will be performing his original Animal Songs live at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens on Sunday, April 25th at 1 p.m. That's 1 p.m. Brooklyn time.
Yes, which is the same as all New York time.
Yeah.
All right.
Just,
now, what's new with you,
Paula Poundstone?
Just
wanted to be clear.
No. You were very specific.
It's been a crazy week. I have friends who run a food bank, and I had told them that I would compost their waste, because there's a lot of fruits and vegetables that go bad somewhere in the process, and so they don't get given out. And I was trying to do it like little bits at a time in the beginning, but this last weekend, through a miscommunication, I ended up with 40 gallons of fruits and rotten fruits and vegetables. And I had to bring it home in trash bags in my car. And my friend Kathy dragged one of the bags across the parking lot and made holes in the bag accidentally. And so it was all in my car. But I got it home and I said to myself, okay, because I had somebody help me get into the car. But I'm like, well, it's too heavy for me to take out all by myself. So I will do little bits at a time. And I had this idea. You know, Adam, how we have those sharp knives that we got from a sponsor?
I love that sponsor, and I love those knives. Those are the Mizen knives.
Yeah, it's a great knife. So my idea was I would bring bucketfuls of the rotten vegetables and fruits into the kitchen, chop it with the knife, put it in the blender, and pour it into the compost, because otherwise it was going to be too much compost. It would overwhelm the pile. So I started doing this. And the main section that I was working on was rotten broccoli and cabbage. And the knife was amazing. So I chop, and then I put it in the blender. And then, I mean, this was hours and hours and hours, and trip after trip to the car, and more stuff in the blender, and more pouring it into the mulch pile. And it was in my hair. It was all over my clothes. It kind of, my red sweater still smells. A couple times I put it too high in the blender, and it made it like come out. So it was all over the cabinets. It was all over the floor. It was, and it was mostly, as I said, rotten broccoli and cabbage. So if anyone wants the recipe, I can, yeah, it was an amazing ordeal. And,
I didn't get through all of it.
I ended up putting the rest of it, which is why I know it was 40 gallons, because I put the rest of it in these trash bins until I could later compost it. And let me tell you, whew, that's a powerful smell. So was,
God damn
I'm good.
It, Paula. That's I guess you're good.
That's the gist of the story. Yeah. Actually, you know, the irony, too, is, of course, I'm pouring this into my compost heap. And the thing about compost is that it really doesn't smell generally, because you cover it over with the dirt within the compost heap. And it's a process. And so it doesn't smell. But this did. And it's right near my neighbor's house.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Adam. Adam.
Yes. What?
Answer the phone.
Really? I'm just trying to get the show started, Paula.
Adam, answer the phone. Answer the phone.
I don't want to answer the phone. All right. Hello?
Hello, Adam.
Hi, Winnie.
Adam, I understand that we can't hang out after the game yet, even though I did win the 100th Koala contest because of the pandemic. So I just want to ask everyone to please wear the masks, do their visits outside as much as possible, and keep your distance, because I can't wait to hang out after the game with Adam. That's
very good advice, Winnie.
Thank you, Adam.
Winnie, are you crying?
No. I just miss you so much, Adam. I've been reading Moby Dick just so I can feel closer to you.
Well, I don't know why you'd miss me, Winnie. We haven't ever spent time together ever before, like ever.
Adam, we're having an affair.
We're not having an affair, Winnie.
Get your mind out of the gutter, Adam. It's the strange mixed affair we call life. It's from Moby Dick. Didn't you read your chapters? Is Tony Anita Hall tutoring you?
Winnie, I just worry that your connection to me isn't healthy.
That demon phantom sometimes or other swims before all human hearts, Adam. Listen, I have to go. I'm doing my reading. You should be censured. Bye, Adam.
Winnie? Did she hang up on me?
No, she said goodbye. I heard her.
All right. Well, let's move forward, Paula. This is exciting. Before we get to
that demon phantom sometime or other swims before all human hearts. She's really reading the book.
She's absolutely reading the book. I think that's from this week's chapters, in fact. But before we get to this, Paula, I have exciting news that I've been wanting to get to. Today, we are pleased to announce a brand new contest. Our Nobodies can compete for the amazing prize of a Zoom party with Paula and me and up to 50 of your closest friends. Now, this is pretty exciting because, Paula, we did this once before.
We did.
And we had a great time at that party.
It was, you know, especially now when a big party isn't something that we can really do. It was something I especially cherished. So, yeah. Now, not everyone has 50 friends. I don't. But up to 50 friends.
Yeah, up to. Yeah, we will not be demanding that 50 people show up before we start talking. We're sociable that way. So I bet you're wondering, what's the contest? How does it work? Here's Adam Felder to tell you all about it. Adam, thanks, Adam. Here's how this one works. We're calling the contest. We're calling the contest the longest cat. Now, we all have cats. If you can figure out which of us has a cat with the longest name, the one with the highest number of letters in it, you will be entered into our drawing to win the big prize. Exciting? Yes, it is. Here's the contest rules. The contest ends at 11:59 p.m. on Tuesday, April 28th, 2021. One entry allowed per email address. Only correct answers will be eligible to win and put in the drawing. Here's what you do. You go to this web address, bit.ly/NLTPP contest421. Now that's a load. I'm going to say it again, but know that you can get this off our social medias too. That's bit.ly/NLTPP contest421. You go there, you fill out a form, you put in your email address, you let us know which cat has the most letters in it, and then you can be entered to win. One winner will be drawn to win the Zoom call, which will be scheduled based on a mutually convenient day and time for Paula Poundstone, Adam Felder, and the winner. The winner will be contacted on May 11th, 2021. Don't leave your house that day. The winner must... No, you can leave. The winner must confirm with NLTPP by May 15th, or a new name will be pulled. Ta-da! The longest cat.
Were you thinking that someone wouldn't be able to remember bit.ly/NLTPP contest421?
Well, I was thinking it might be a little bit, especially if they're driving right now, to remember bit.ly/NLTPP contest421. So I wanted to give them the option and let them know if you go to our Facebook page or our Twitter feed, you can find that address. We're going to pin it right to the top. Right, Tony Anita Hall?
Yes, we will.
So, by the way, NLTPP, now I've never worked for the CIA, but I'm going to tell you this. It's the abbreviation for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. I cracked that code.
It is that. Yeah, well, yeah. You cracked the code. Now, the 421, I don't get, but we'll, you know.
April 2021. That's what 421 stands for.
And what is the significance of the date April 21?
No, I'm just saying it's April of 2021. That's where my mind was when I did that. I'm sorry. And it's a bit.ly link. Anyone who's my age knows what that is.
I know what a bit.ly link is too, Missy.
I have no idea what that is.
It's one of the more prominent of the commercial link shortening services so that it can be a short and memorable web address, not something long.
I hate you so much.
Are there link shortening services?
There are.
I'm not a religious person, but I would go to a link shortening service.
You go to a link shortening service.
No, I don't.
No, your business does. Your dates do. You use a link shortening service.
Oh my gosh. This was like when Madge had the woman soaking in Palmolive and she didn't even know it.
Yeah, you are currently soaking in link shortening.
Wow, I love that.
And with that, order. Order. I am calling the Mighty Moby Dick Book Club to order.
No.
It is not a Moby Dick Book Club. It's the Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone Book Club that is reading Moby Dick. You don't change the name of the club every time you read a different book.
I guess I'm hoping that this is the only book this club ever reads.
No, it's not.
That isn't nice. That isn't nice.
I'm getting really tired of the book club. Not you guys, but Moby Dick.
I think we've inspired so many people to have a love of literature as a result of this book club. I take great pride in that.
Okay, I think you're right. But let me just tell you guys what happened. We read chapters 46 to 55 this week, and I was getting bored. So what I did is I started reading it aloud to my cat, Moonbeam. And it was actually a pretty exciting section. Things are finally happening. I mean, we're hearing the legend of Moby Dick. We're finding out that Captain Ahab's completely crazy. We hear something underneath in the hold, and then it turns out that he's got this whole like weird second crew that's there exclusively to hunt Moby Dick with him. And then it turns into kind of this ghost story because they think they see this spout every night, and they go out there and there's no whale, and they talk to other ships and they're asking for tales of Moby Dick, and they hear a tale of a guy who got killed. It was a really exciting bunch of chapters, I thought. Hey, let's go to Sherman Oaks, California for Tony Anita Hull's take on this.
So I've been spending a lot of time with my cat, Mr. Totes, but that's not the reason why I didn't read the book. You know I'm against reading this book now. And I think
you didn't read the book?
Why.
You told Dolly Parton you were going to read the book.
Oh my God, wow. I lied. So
No, you didn't lie. You lied to Dolly Parton.
Yeah, what kind of an asshole lies to Dolly Parton? Oh, Tony. All right, go ahead.
Let me defend myself. So you know why I don't think I connect with this book? There are no female characters in it.
That's not true.
Which I think is ridiculous.
That's not true.
And so,
that's a good point.
No,
I would say that the entire industry of whaling didn't really pass the Bechdel test.
Yes. So listener David Snyder from Oberlin, Ohio, recommended a book called Ahab's Wife by Sina Jeter Nasland, and I think that's what I'm going to read instead now of Moby Dick.
No, you're not. Listener,
Tony, you've gone rogue. You've gone rogue.
Listeners, as much as I love you, do not send in recommendations on shit Tony can read instead of the book. That's absurd.
So can I tell you the opening line?
Yes.
Captain Ahab. No. Yes, Captain Ahab was neither my first husband nor my last. Isn't that so much more intriguing than Call Me Ishmael?
No. No, not really.
Mr. Totes, my cat, would agree.
Well, maybe Mr. Totes and you should set up your own book club because you're just kind of fucking us over, Tony.
Yeah,
I'm just
I can't
saying,
believe that.
Where are the women?
There is a woman in the book. It's the owner's wife. No, the owner's sister, excuse me. The owner's sister.
No.
Not only that, there's the woman who runs the inn. Remember the woman who runs the chowder hut?
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
Okay, how many chapters do they exist in out of the 135?
You know what? We're not going to tell you. You find out from your Captain Ahab wife book.
You know what? I'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony's going to read the Moby Dick book of names. I just don't understand. What? You must have been a terrible student.
No,
the
I was
teacher
actually
would,
an excellent no. student.
No, she, I know. The teacher
Straight
would say,
a
everyone,
student.
The teacher would say, everyone open your books, and Tony from the back of the room would be, make me.
No, that was you.
I always have strong opinions.
I think it's kind of weird that it took this long, Tony, for you to go like, you know what? There's no women in this book. I mean, like, it's not called Moby Vag.
Oh, damn. Damn. Phelps, damn.
That was specifically for Paula.
I've been trying to just figure out why I'm not connecting with the material. And I
think
I
see.
That's why.
That's possible. Totally possible. Well, let's go talk to somebody else here. Is there somebody else I can talk to? Tony, I'm going to talk to your supervisor.
Me?
Let's go to Bonnie Burns, who does connect with this.
Well, okay. I found these chapters really gut-wrenching. You know, I was on the edge of the whaling boat seat. Why is that so funny?
Paula started laughing before I did.
chapters were good. They were intriguing. You're right. There was a little bit of, there's more action than there has been, and that was good, but gut-wrenching? Gut-wrenching?
Order. Paula, Bonnie Burns has the floor and possibly a gastric disorder.
Yeah, gut-wrenching. Yeah, it could be coming from somewhere else.
You know, there were the creepy guys that got in the boat and Ahab manipulating this crew to, you know, get what he wanted. But, you know, at first when I was reading him, I was thinking, Ahab's going after what he wants at all costs. He doesn't care about people. He's just, you know, life or death, whatever it is, he just wants what he wants. And it's an allegory to, like, if somebody wants success and they think it's going to bring them happiness. And then, you know, like, people die on their way, blah, 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 blah. But the more I read, the more I thought, no, it's none of this. And, you know, it's really taking this writer a long time to get to the point. And by the time I got to chapter 55, I didn't remember anything from the beginning. So the one pleasurable thing that had happened, we have a really cool cat named Tiger. And when we got him, he was like a rescue cat. Why are you laughing?
In what way was he like a rescue cat?
He was a rescue cat.
He played one in community theater.
Well, then I think you could say that sentence without the word like in it.
Giving cats away.
Senator Burns has the floor. Order.
Okay.
Go on, Bonnie.
Anyway, but we get this cat. We take him home. I think my daughter was 7, whatever. So we get him home, and we had this, like, little plastic red cup, like, that you put toothbrushes in. The cat was on the floor, and he held that cup in his two little paws. And then he was, like, making these really sort of, like,
I don't know what's
like, are these sounds, like, that were unusual, and he was this sort of odd stripe coloring. So we look him up in a book, and all the descriptions fit a Bengal cat, which, you know, is pretty expensive. So I called the pet store, and I said, you know, I don't think you guys realize, like, what you gave us was a Bengal cat. And the lady said, no, we knew we gave you a Bengal cat, but you didn't know that it was a Bengal cat, and that's why we let you have it. So his name's Tiger, and he's a really cool cat.
Is this in Moby Dick?
Yeah, what the hell just happened?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with Moby Dick. I just thought I'd tell you the story.
Yeah. Can she be censured again? Is it time to censure them again?
Be censured. Yeah. I move to censure. Paula, you can move to censure. I can second it.
Oh, my God. Yes. I can't believe it.
Let's take a vote.
I'm trying to learn about Moby Dick, and I hear a story about Bonnie's cat holding a cup. Why am I listening to that?
That's unusual. How many cats can hold a cup in their paws?
I'm holding a vote. All in favor of censuring Bonnie Burns, say aye. Aye. Well, clearly we're all here, and yet we somehow don't have a quorum. Let's continue.
Nay.
Let's move on. Paula, what's your take on Moby Dick this week? Order. Order.
All right. So, as you guys know, I have the floor. As you guys know, I listened to the whole book within the first couple of weeks. But now, in order to sort of backtrack to be with you slowpokes, I've been reading it. I think we were supposed to read chapters 45 to 55 this week. So, I was reading... And I got as far as what there may be of a narrative in this book, which is the first sentence of chapter 45, when I heard my cat ShamWow ralphing really loudly in front of the cleaning closet. And when I opened the cleaning closet to get a cloth, my cat Theo ran in there. And when I grabbed Theo to pull him out, he grabbed that silver vent hose thing on the furnace with his claws, tore it, and pulled it off. When I get out the phone book to find a repairman, and yes, I do still use a phone book, it's just that many of the businesses in the yellow pages have closed. Anyway, when I get out the phone book, my cat Wednesday peed on it. And I called the repairman and sat down to read Moby Dick with a soda, and my cat Mrs. Fezziwig knocked the soda over. I cleaned it up and sat down to read again, and then I heard a muffled meow sound. I opened the cleaning closet, and my cat, Hardy, had gone into the hole where the vent was attached to the furnace. I pulled her out and sat down to read, but by that time, my cat, Harrison, who is the schedule keeper in my house, can't hold a fucking cup, I'll tell you that. By that time, my cat, Harrison, was yowling at me to feed them. And I tried to read again today, but the minute I sat down, my cat Severus started a fight with my cat Tonks. I'll tell you something. You just cannot read Moby Dick and not see this as an omen. So I stopped. And you know what?
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 I really want a kitten.
Oh, no.
Don't do it, Paula. All right.
You better talk to Wendell.
I am going to call the meeting of our book club, which is now three quarters of us reading Moby Dick, one quarter of us reading Ahab's Wife, to a close. All right. Now, Paula, do you have a word this week?
I do have a word, Adam. Wait, let me just... Adam, I do have a word. It's inveigh. It's a verb that means speak or write about someone with great hostility. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Most Republicans in Congress fear telling the truth because the former guy will inveigh against them.
Ooh, nice.
Let's put it right in our vocabulary song. Here we go. Wait. Here it is. This week's word is inveigh. It's a verb that means speak or write about someone with great hostility. Sports fans do this when a player doesn't show agility. Last week's word was schadenfreude. It's a noun that means pleasure derived by someone from another person's misfortune. I wouldn't mind if Mar-a-Lago was shut down through May or June. The week before that, the word was immutable. It's an adjective that means not changing or able to be changed. What if the furniture on the Titanic couldn't be rearranged? Going back before that, the word was ultra-crepidarian. It's an adjective that means expressing opinions on matters outside the scope of one's knowledge or expertise. It's also a noun that means someone you'd describe as ultra-crepidarian, ultra-crepidarian, ultra-crepidarian. I think it's safe to eat that uncooked carrion. And not long ago we had insensate. It's an adjective that means lacking sympathy or compassion, unfeeling. Get up and do all my chores even though you're still healing. Let's never forget gallimaufry, which I pronounced wrong until nobody, James Hyder, corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumble or medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do, I do.
Woo!
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Really, really, you really summed that up there nicely there.
Yeah, I just, you know, you go to another level. That's what I find. When you
when you play the Glock like that?
Yeah. You just go to another level. It's like you guys weren't even there for me. I mean, I know you were there, but like I just was in another place.
I wasn't there for you. I often take my headphones out during that segment.
Oh, that's why you weren't there for me. Yeah. My mistake.
That's why. Whew. Coming up, Thomas Aquinas said sorrow can be alleviated by good sleep, a bath, and a glass of wine. So grab a drink, hop in a tub. It's time for our slumber party next on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Hey, everybody. As longtime listeners know, when Helix Mattresses first started sponsoring our show,
Bonnie Burns somehow got the drop on me and made off with the first mattress. But in the intervening years, I have gotten myself a Helix mattress. I've had it for almost a year now, and it has improved my sleep. It has improved my life. I could not be happier. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, which I have, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, which is a mattress designed just for big and tall sleepers, and they even have mattresses made just for kids. Now, if you're like me and you were a little nervous about trying it online, or like Paula, who was screaming in fear of buying a mattress online, don't be. The Helix Sleep Quiz takes into account your individual sleep preference to match you and your partner with the perfect mattress. I took the quiz and I ended up with the great mattress for a side sleeper, the Helix Midnight Lux. Take my word for it, everybody. The Helix Midnight Lux.
Oh, don't want to take Adam's word for it. I don't blame you. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula and use the code HELIXPARTNER20.
This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Paula, I invited you over, but you fell asleep. helixsleep.com/Paula, and if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
A detective came and knocked on the door. And I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me down there my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here you go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
On this day in unremarkable history, Jane Goodall said, do I tell Flo that David Greybeard is having an affair? I mean, they're chimpanzees, but she's my friend.
Thank you to houseband Adam Fisher. Paula, even though you somewhat famously don't have a bed, you are a big fan of sleep.
I am. I love to sleep. In fact, when I wake up in the morning, sometimes the only thing that gets me moving is the idea that the sooner I get up and get all my shit done, the sooner I can get back to sleep, which makes me curious about how it works and why it is so damn good.
Well, Paula Poundstone, we are fortunate to have an expert on that very topic by coincidence.
She has a doctorate in clinical psychology from Washington University and now runs the Mizzou Sleep Research Lab at the University of Missouri. Her research focuses on comorbid insomnia, objective and subjective sleep assessment, and day-to-day variability in sleep and related behaviors. Let's welcome Dr. Christina McRae. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we're so glad you're here. Let's just jump right in. Dr. McRae, what happens when we sleep?
Oh, that could be a really long answer, but let me give you the short of it. Physical and mental restoration, sleep is a foundational health behavior along with exercise and nutrition, and it impacts our health physically and mentally. It also impacts our quality of life. That's sleep in a nutshell.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. You're correct. Now let's go on to the bonus round.
All right. How much, Adam doesn't know if you're correct, by the way. He's an ultra crepidarian.
How much do you want to know? Do you want to
know? That was exactly what we wanted to know. He's only kidding. How much sleep do we need?
Doing what I do, I hate that question somewhat, but I know everybody wants to ask it because
I do.
Yeah, obviously you do. So we start off sleeping the most we're ever going to sleep when we're babies, and then it sort of goes downhill progressively from there. okay. So you start off, needing, 14 to 17 hours as an infant, till you're 65 and over, then you're about 7 or 8 hours a night. So I know everyone tries to get that mythical 8 hours. I hear it all the time. And the reason I don't like that question, because in what I do, I work with insomniacs, and sometimes the over-focus on how much sleep one is or isn't getting is part of the problem.
Oh, wow. That is the most liberating thing to hear, because I am an insomniac, lifelong.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you're the type of person I work with all day, just about every day, it feels like sometimes. So the reason I don't like that question is that I would prefer to have you focus on sleeping in a consolidated block of sleep, because often people with insomnia, their sleep is sort of chopped up throughout the night. They're, taking a long time to fall asleep, and then they wake up a lot during the night. I would much rather see you sleep a consolidated block of sleep and then look at how you're feeling and functioning during the day as the gauge of when we've hit the right amount of sleep for you.
Oh.
Huh. So, actually listen to what my body's saying about how I feel rather than just beat up on myself every day for 50 years about not having enough sleep?
Exactly. Yeah. How are you feeling and functioning during the day? And once we've got you to where you're sleeping a good solid block and you're feeling good during the day, then we've hit on the number that's right for you.
Wow.
Here's another way you might work with yourself, Adam, and with your patients, Dr. McRae, is instead of worrying about how much sleep, obsessing over how much sleep people are getting, they could just be concerned about being awake less. It's just a different way of phrasing it, that's all.
Huh.
Yeah.
That Adam, might be very helpful, although I completely don't understand it.
Well, maybe you could lay awake and sort it out. What happens when we don't sleep?
So the short answer is bad things, but it has a negative impact on our health mentally and physically. And I particularly like to point out right now, since we're in the midst of a pandemic, that, not sleeping well can have an impact on our immune functioning.
Oh.
It can have an impact on our, our heart, our cardiovascular system. It can have an impact on, memory and learning, mood. You can be more irritable if you're not sleeping well.
That's not true.
Not at all.
after Farley Mowat's book came out, or maybe after the movie came out, Never Cry Wolf, there was sort of this idea. Remember wolf naps? Like wolves sleep for like 20 minutes at a time or something like that? There was sort of an idea at one point that maybe that was a good idea, that you, you know, you'd sleep for a little while and then you'd do something, then you sleep for a little while. Why won't that work?
Yeah, so in the work that I do with people who have insomnia, we actually encourage not napping during the day. And we use the analogy of napping is like snacking before dinner. So you want to build up your appetite for sleep. The longer you're awake, the more you're increasing your sleep drive. And if you take that nap, you're sort of reducing that sleep drive a little bit. You might not sleep as well then at night.
Oh. Huh. Now, is sleep retroactive? Like, you know, how some people will, you know, just sort of bust ass all week, getting, you know, not enough sleep all week, and then they say, well, I sleep on the weekend. Does it work that way?
Oh, don't we all wish it would?
Yeah, is sleep debt a thing? I hear about that a lot.
It is a thing. I know we all wish, like, oh, we slept 1 hour less each day during the week, so we'll sleep 5 hours more on the weekend and we'll make up for that. And unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way. It takes, sleep debt is cumulative, but it takes longer than a day or two to sort of make up for not having slept well. And we're not even sure if you really and truly can completely, you know, make up for sleep in that way. But boy, I get asked that all the time, because we ask in my research for people to maintain, you know, consistent bed and wake times. And sometimes that's difficult. And boy, they really want to, you know, take advantage of the weekends to say, like, well, I didn't do so well on the week, but I'm going to make up for it over the weekend. And we know that, unfortunately, doesn't work so well.
Oh.
Now, does sleep on an airplane, like, for, you know, 41 years, you know, I traveled a lot.
Yep.
And I would often get, you know, a couple hours of sleep in a bed. And then most of my sleep was just traveling on the airplane. Is airplane sleep, when your neck is kind of bobbing up and down and you're drooling and deeply humiliated, is that the same as sleeping in a bed?
So that's a somewhat complicated question. There's all kinds of tips about how to sleep better on an airplane, and that's because most people find it somewhat difficult, right? Because you got lots going on around you. You're not comfortable, as you've described. So for most people, sleeping on a plane is not going to be the same as sleeping in their bed. But obviously, trying to get what if you can on a plane, as opposed to not sleeping at all, might be better for you than, as I said, not sleeping at all. But I mean, how did you feel when you were sleeping on the plane? Did that feel like you were, actually not in your bed, because you don't sleep in a bed, right?
Right. But the minute my butt hits the seat, I'm out like a light.
Yep.
I a lot of times, for the most part, if I'm traveling alone and I sit down, then I fall asleep. And there's times where it turns out there was like hours of delay. Or maybe we never even took off, and I don't know about it, because I was just asleep.
Wow.
The whole time. Yeah.
So it sounds you sleep well on a plane.
Maybe it's the opposite for me. Maybe sleeping at home is really fucking me up, and I need an airplane. I'm hoping insurance is going to cover that. That's what I'm hoping.
Leonardo da Vinci said, a well-spent day brings happy sleep. A well-spent life brings happy death. Way to bring the room down, Leo. But we'll come back and try to rebound from that when we return. The cat of the week is Maud from Chehalis, Washington.
J. Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper, or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we are back with Dr. Christina McCrae. Now, doctor, why can't I sleep?
I don't know. Tell me, why do you think you can't sleep?
Oh, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. So let me, before we get into me, which is, you know, really what I'm here about, why don't you tell us some of the most common things that are keeping people from sleeping?
Oh, I know one thing. I know one thing. Sorry to interrupt, but it's this. La, 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 la. When I used to do that, when I put my kids to bed, they could not sleep.
Okay, that's probably one.
Yeah. That's a okay. big one.
Sorry to interrupt. I just rarely have an answer. And when I had that, I got excited.
No, you knew that one. Full marks on that, Paula.
Yeah, much appreciated. That is... definitely one. There are a variety of factors that can impact someone's sleep, but I would say these days the screen time is a really big issue for folks. And I, during the pandemic, I think it's even more so than it was before. You know, it's just so hard to put those devices down to sort of like start the whole relaxing and going to bed process. And I think people tend to stay up later. You're sort of surfing around.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I've become a stimulus junkie, I think. You know, looking for sort of a hit of especially political kind of stuff. I find myself, you know, filling a hole a lot of times.
Yeah, it's addictive.
But isn't it also sort of a vicious cycle? Like you can't sleep, so you read. And you read and it interests you, so you can't sleep even more. I mean, that seems to be lifelong what's been happening with me.
Yep, definitely for some people, when they can't sleep, we'll say if you're going to read, make it something boring. Don't make it like a novel that you're going to get all wrapped up in where you're like, I got to get to the next chapter and then the next chapter and the next chapter because that's defeating the whole purpose. So you have to be sort of selective about what you're going to do. And then we also recommend if you're, you know, someone with insomnia, we recommend that you get out of the bed, out of your bed and out of your bedroom and go to something in another room if you are having difficulty falling asleep so that you don't associate your bed, your bedroom, bedtime, all that with being awake and wakeful activities.
Oh, it's like training
wow.
a puppy or something. what about if Adam gets up from his bed and he goes to the living room and he does uses woodworking tools? Is that...
No. So what we did, we do have to...
That might impact the sleep of some of my family members
Exactly. Go ahead.
Credible bandsaw there, Paul.
That was good. So that is something that we have to work with people to sort of like make sure that the activity that they're picking doesn't become sort of part of the problem. So, you know, I have worked with people like, oh, I'm going to get up and bake 20 pies for my church or whatever it is they're doing. We're like, no, that's defeating the purpose. It needs to be something that is sort of low-key, a little bit boring, so that as soon as you start to feel sleepy, then you can go back to bed. These activities that you're describing are things that you might kind of really get into, and then you don't want to go back to sleep. You get sort of more activated.
Those church people, the ones that want to make the pies for their church, they should read that book of the Bible that has the begats. You know, so-and-so begat so-and-so, and so-and-so begat so-and-so. I mean, it really is not a page-turner, that section. So that could do it.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit about the different sleep stages. So you've probably heard that we... Oops. Okay, it's time for me to go to bed.
Oh, my God. It's time to get up. You have a terrible sleep schedule.
No, I'm so sorry. That is the time that my 12-year-old needs to start his sleep routine, and he's supposed to be in bed by 9. I forgot to turn that off. My apologies.
I see.
So you probably know that we, throughout the night, our sleep cycles through 4 stages, 4 to 5 times during the typical night, and one cycle takes, I don't know, a little over an hour to 2 hours, sort of in that range. And the stages are broken into REM, which is rapid eye movement sleep, which you've probably heard of, and then 3 stages of non-REM sleep. And so we start off sleep with going from the non-REM stage 1, which is the lightest, and you're transitioning into sleep, to stage 2, which is, again, still a lighter stage, and you're easily awoken, but it's a little deeper than stage 1. And then into stage 3, which is also known as slow wave sleep. And then you go into the rapid eye movement sleep. And the interesting thing about the rapid eye movement sleep is it's sometimes referred to as paradoxical sleep, because your brain is as active as you were when you're awake, but a lot of your musculature is paralyzed. I mean, with the exception of breathing and your heart still beating and that type of thing. And it's thought that that occurs so that you're not, you often have your most intense dreams during that state. And it's thought that that occurs so that you're not acting out your dreams.
Wow.
Oh, we got to get my dog some of that.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
Because you know, their legs move a lot when they're having bad dreams and stuff.
Mm-hmm. They sure do.
Well, they're as fucked up as I am.
I had a friend, a comic friend, who used to say, sleep is death without the responsibility. I always liked that.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Now, Thomas Edison famously slept very little, and he was a tremendously productive genius. Are there flukes to these sleep theories, you know, about how much?
Yeah, are there?
And not Adam. Adam is not one of the flukes to the sleep theories. Just keep that in mind.
You don't know that. I could be.
No, you're not. I do know that. I did a study.
You don't do a study.
Yeah, so... there are these sort of unique individuals that we hear about that are, you know, highly productive and have unusual sleep patterns. You know, with Edison, I think, wasn't he a frequent napper? And he would be caught napping throughout the day. And
he did nap sometimes, but they were, according to the biography that I listened to, the naps were very brief. And he often would work, you know, 24, 48, like, you know, work days in a row and then sleep. But he would, he would sort of lay down in a corner and use his jacket for a pillow and then wake up in a little while and be hard back at it.
Yeah. And I don't know if that also told you, because I looked him up as well, because I was like, this is interesting, that he would hold like metal balls. And so as he was drifting off, he would drop them and that would wake him up, and he'd write down all of his thoughts. And that's how he came up with some of his inventive thoughts. Did you see that?
Gosh, I'm like, no.
That was really interesting.
No, how could this biographer not have said that? No, I never heard that. Oh my gosh.
Well, that was on the internet. Who knows? Maybe it's not.
Yeah. I do something similar in that occasionally I fall asleep reading, and if it's a hardcover book, it hits me in the head.
Yeah, me too.
And then I wake up and dog ear it and go to bed. So
well,
the dog
write down
earing,
your thoughts, apparently, if you're listening to Edison, write down.
I guess I should. Do people get paid to be a subject in sleep studies?
They do.
I'm so happy. I found my niche.
Yep, you can definitely get paid to, we pay our participants who are participate in our research studies. And I think most researchers do.
I got to say, I don't see how that could possibly work. I mean, not for me. I mean, the idea that I would have to, you know, it's hard enough for me to look at the clock and realize I'm not getting enough sleep, and that keeps me up. The idea that I would have to fall asleep in a laboratory setting, I just don't think I could do it.
Well, interesting that you say that, but the people I work with that have insomnia, they often sleep better somewhere other than their own bedroom.
And plus, when they wake up, don't they go on the wheel?
Yes, the big wheel we have them run on. No. So the research that I do is we are paying people for their time. Time, essentially. It's compensation for the time that they give to the study. But then usually my research involves giving them some sort of treatment, and then we look at how their sleep is after the treatment. So it's not literally like we're coming, having them come into the lab and say, okay, if you sleep 8 hours, you're getting $80, and if you sleep 9, you know, it's not that type of payment for a sleep study.
Oh my God, I could have made a shitload of money. When you say you give them some sort of treatment, what kinds of things?
Yeah, so my... I do all non-drug types of treatments, and so we focus on behaviors and thought patterns that we know interfere with sleep, and so we do a treatment called cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia, and it's actually the recommended treatment for chronic insomnia, and then we're also testing out some new things. We're using virtual reality type of treatment that we're testing that's, you know, brand new to us. We've just developed the protocol. Those types of things.
Now, I'm glad you're not using the drugs thing. I'd say I tried Ambien for a little while and I just hated it.
Uh-huh.
That was just rotten. It's just a terrible. I mean, I'd get sleep, but I never felt good in the morning.
Yeah, and that's the case for a lot of people. Once you have a chronic sleep type of problem, that's where recommending the medications typically isn't the route for somebody who's had a chronic problem. Once it gets beyond 3 months, if you had the difficulty falling and staying asleep, or you're, you know, waking up unrefreshed in the morning, or waking up earlier than you want in the morning, if you have insomnia, chronic insomnia, we're not typically going to recommend a medication in that situation. The cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia is often the first.
How about other things that people recommend, like warm tea or melatonin or any of those things?
Or milk.
Yeah, we actually tell people if you're, you know, not to eat a big meal within a couple hours of bedtime, but if you, you know, feel like you absolutely have to have something, we'll say like maybe, you know, a small glass of milk is fine. But in terms of milk itself as the treatment, I don't think there's a lot of evidence to support that that's going to be your best bet.
Oh, there is. Have you ever been to a farm at night? The calves are
cows
out like
sleep.
Lights.
Oh,
no, not the cows.
So well.
They don't drink milk. The calves. Oh, my God. You can't wake them.
Yeah.
Try to get a calf to do anything for you after 5 p.m. It's not going to work.
Yep.
Nope.
They're also young. Remember I said that when we're young, I'm young. I think of myself young. When you're very young, you tend to sleep a lot, and it's sort of like... decreases as we go across the lifespan. So they got that going for them too.
Yeah.
Is melatonin a thing? Is melatonin helpful? Should I be taking that?
Oh, this is another one that...
people say it.
Yes, they
And people are always right.
Yes, yeah. They are, yeah. So this is one where it gets difficult because it's hard to know what is in what you're getting if you buy it at your local pharmacy, you know, because it's not regulated. But it is used often, like with certain groups, like kids with autism. I know melatonin is used a lot, and very frequently when people come into my research studies, they're using melatonin as well. But when you're taking it for insomnia, you really need to work with someone who knows what they're doing and knows when you should be taking it. So you're gonna need to take it like a couple hours before you want to actually fall asleep. It's not like a sleeping pill. You take it and then you immediately fall asleep. So I think the problems are you don't know how potent the particular melatonin is that you've gotten. And then I think often how it's administered, people aren't administering it correctly. So I think that's part of the problem with melatonin. And if you have a chronic insomnia problem, again, I'm always going to recommend the cognitive behavioral and strategies like that, because we know that your thought patterns and your behaviors are the things that sort of help to maintain a chronic sleep problem like insomnia.
All right. We should probably wrap it up, but I did just want to ask you one more question. And I get this from mostly, I don't know, Warner Brothers cartoons or maybe some Tom and Jerry's. What about a mallet?
Yeah, that's a fair question. Blunt trauma to the head. How good is that as a sleep aid?
Yeah. I'm not going to recommend that.
Wow.
Surprisingly, I know you're expecting something different there.
Shocking. Well,
I guess you're in it. Four out of five doctors do, though, so I guess you're the fifth.
Exactly.
Well, Dr. Christina McCray, that was excellent. But now I'm afraid what we're going to have to do is take all that knowledge that you unfolded for us and stuff it into the old Pouncedonator and see what comes out. Paula?
House band cellist Adam Fisher, you sound terrific. And we're so grateful to have your wonderful music on our show. If I could task you with providing some background music while I tell you what the Pouncedonator spit out. Everybody wants to know how much sleep they're supposed to get, but Dr. McCray has a better question, which is, how do you feel and function during the day? If you're at the top of your game, you're probably in the sweet spot sleep schedule-wise. This is a life-changing concept for me. I do shit wrong all the time, and I never adjust my sleep schedule as a result. That changes right now. More than once, I've asked women who weren't pregnant when their baby was due. Once you make that mistake, even once, it should be the last time. But if I ever again say to a woman, "When is the baby due?" and she says, "I'm not pregnant," I'm going to close my eyes right then and there, slump to the floor and say, "I'm just going to conk out for a couple of hours because clearly I am not at my best." Next time I get pulled over driving and the cop says, "I've stopped you because you made an illegal U-turn. Can I see your license and registration?" I'll say, "Yes, sir, officer. You are absolutely right. I'm just fucking up right and left. My body is telling me I'm not getting the right amount of sleep. So I'm just going to put my seat back and have a nap, and I will be happy to get you my license and registration after that." By the way, how are you functioning today, sir? This passenger seat goes back if you need a few more hours of sleep.
She's head of the Mizzou Sleep Research Lab at the University of Missouri, and she has been just so great. Thank you so much. Dr. Christina McCray, everybody.
Ooh. Dr. McCray, thank you so much. It was really informative, and I'm going to bed.
Coming up next, why are you having trouble sleeping? Because you're just so darn curious about us and the way we run our little show. It's time for Mailbag Insider Edition when we return. Fun fact, a sea slug whose head gets cut off can grow back an entire new body, which saves them all a shitload on plastic surgery.
Remember that.
What?
Adam.
Remember what?
That when a sea slug gets its head cut off, it can grow back an entire body, and that saves it a shitload on plastic surgery. Remember
I
that.
I should remember that.
It's a cautionary tale. That's how I heard it.
Yeah.
I just don't know what just happened. And we're back. Paula, it's just about time for Mailbag. Insider Edition. Now, our listeners have been paying close attention to our lives and the way the show works. And, well, they have questions about us and the way we run this joint.
And we're pulling them out of what?
Well, we thought we'd pull them out for Mailbag. Insider Edition. Yeah. Insider Edition. Okay, so Tony Anita Hall, you're our resident reacher into of the mailbag. Insider Edition. Step on up to the mic and read us some mailbag. Insider Edition.
Okay, I think we're ready.
How quietly you say Insider Edition, I'm still going to do this with the glockenspiel.
Insider Edition.
I'm just gonna wait it out.
No. Come on, we're ready. Come on, Tony. Lay it on us.
So this is this is from Christopher Chadwick. I've been listening to the show since the beginning, and I have no idea why Senator Sanders calls Adam Compasshead. What did I miss?
Well, you missed the episode where Senator Sanders started calling me Compasshead.
Clearly.
Paula, do you want to tell this story? I believe it was one of our earliest auctions when Senator Bernie Sanders dropped by for the first time.
That is correct, Compasshead. I will be honest with you because you can expect that from me, from Bernie Sanders. I've forgotten why I called him Compasshead.
I remember too. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Because he said he had a natural sense of direction. I believe that was it. When we were auctioning off Lewis and Clark's boat.
Yeah. He was an arrogant ass and said he usually knew north at any given time.
I would not describe Adam Felber as an arrogant ass.
Thank you, Bernie.
He did say at the time that he knew true north at any time he was asked, and that is where Compasshead came from.
I don't see how that's absolutely right, Senator Sanders, but I don't see how that's a display of arrogance or asshood.
Okay, I feel badly that I use that word. I really do.
It's too late.
You said
it's
too late.
You said it.
Head out the window.
Captain Crinkle, you're on the record as having called Adam Felber an arrogant ass. And it's on the record. It's on the record.
No, but the way he said it, he said he could stick his head out the window and look in any direction. And he knew what direction that was.
That's
like it was some great claim to fame.
That's absolutely not what I was saying. I said I generally know where north is.
Why on earth would he stick his head out the window? I don't. That doesn't sound arrogant. It sounds stupid. I would stick. What is he, a dog? Is he a dog sticking his head out the window?
No, Senator Sanders, I'm not a dog. And I never said I stick my head out the window. This is all.
Maybe you said look out the window.
Then why, Captain Crinkle, if I can ask. Why would you say stick your head out the window? Why? It makes no sense.
Senator Sanders, you might not be aligned with any party. You're an independent, famously. But if you could do me the favor of introducing a sense of the Senate resolution censuring Captain Crinkle for this conduct, I would be very, very, very appreciative.
She should be censored. She should.
be censored. Absolutely. I would support censoring Captain Crinkle at this time. It's unacceptable. First of all, when I heard you say stick his head, naturally, I thought you were going to say up his ass.
Now, and wait a minute.
That's what I thought. That's exactly what I thought. And that's why this is inappropriate, Compass Head.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sanders and Christopher Chadwick. Tony, what else is in that mailbag?
Oh, shit. Wait. Oh, fuck. What was I thinking? Oh, my God.
Okay. Tony, what else you got?
This is from Jeffrey James.
Insider edition.
Oh, God damn it. I'm outraged that you would all...
I was outraged. I was absolutely outraged by what Captain Crinkle Bunny Boynes had to say about our friend Adam Felber. Outraged. And, I believe this listener has put into words the way I felt, which was outrage. Bunny Boynes.
Right, but we haven't really gotten to beyond the word outrage in this particular...
You know what? It does not take any more words to express the way that I felt. I would simply say to you, let me be clear, outrage. I felt outraged. I would like to be clear. I want to make sure that I am crystal clear.
I would like to move to censure Senator Sanders.
What? At this point, Tony Anita, you are not in a position, frankly, let me be clear, to censure. That's absurd. That's absurd. Just reach your hand into the mailbag. And if you would just read to us. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm so hesitant. Here we go. I am outraged that you would all be... Ah, God damn it! I believed you!
All right, you know what? Something very juvenile is going on here. And we are adults, and we are leaders, and we are above what's happening here. I apologize, Tony, on behalf of Paula Poundstone. I don't know what's gotten into her, but Compass Head, I owe you an apology. Tony,
it's all right, Senator.
I owe you an apology. Captain Quinkle, not so much. All right. Proceed with the reading.
This is from Jeffrey James. Okay. I am outraged that you would all be disrespectful to the great novel Moby Dick. Instead, you talk
I
about...
I share that. I share that feeling. That
Senator Sanders, you're out of order.
Jeffrey James, I feel that outrage.
This is why I voted for Elizabeth Warren, Senator Sanders.
She would have been a fine president. She would. I too voted for... Elizabeth Warren. Let me be clear. I support Elizabeth Warren very much. And I am also outraged, as Jeffrey James is, about the disrespect to the great novel Moby Dick. You know, I recall, it's been quite a while since I read the novel myself, but I do recall that it was gut-wrenching.
This is why we need to get rid of the filibuster. Right here.
Chapter, let me be clear, in particular, chapter 45 was gut-wrenching.
Tony, I'm gonna let you. I'm gonna let you finish.
I'm gonna let you finish as well. Tony, go ahead. Thank you. Thank you, Compass Head.
Okay. Go ahead, please. So we know that Jeffrey James is outraged about our disrespect to the novel Moby Dick. Instead, you talk about Cosmo magazine and Bonnie tripping on over-the-counter painkillers. By the way, can you share the part about cleaning drawers? Thank you, Jeffrey James.
The part about cleaning drawers? Because, does anybody know what he's talking about?
Because Paula brought in the magazine about cleaning because she couldn't find Cosmo.
Right.
I do recall that. It was a fascinating read. I spent the entire night dusting.
I yield my mailbag duties. Dude, I can't even talk. I yield my mailbag duties to Insider Senator Edition. Sanders. To Senator Sanders, you take over mailbag. I quit.
That is not according to parliamentary procedure. Tony, you cannot do that.
Oh my God.
I cannot support what Tony Anita Hull has suggested. You are the...
I can help.
Oh,
I
no.
Can help.
Great. Great. God.
Damn it.
Senator Klobuchar, I'm great. So happy to have your support.
Oh, look, everyone. It's Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Fabulous.
Isn't this great?
All right. I share, as I'm sure you do, Senator Klobuchar, I share Jeffrey James's outrage about the way they have disrespected the work of Hyman Melville.
Oh my God. I love that book.
I'm sure that you spent night after night in high school having your gut wrenched by that book. Particularly, I'm, of course, speaking of chapter 45. All right. So thank you, Jeffrey James. Nobody, Jeffrey James, for that comment or piece of...
We got it, Sanders. I'm going to... Insider Edition. Now, Tony, why don't you step on up and read us another piece of mail?
Okay, this is from Joshua Van Dyne. What's the point of the book club if you never talk about the book? I've been reading it and you spend the segment talking about Cosmo.
I got this.
I guess Mr. Van Dyne has no interest in knowing where his prostate is.
Or how to milk it.
Because Cosmo will tell you, and Herman Melville won't.
I think that I am well within my rights. And I think that I speak for many of the workers in the United States and those organizing in Alabama to establish their labor rights with Amazon. I think that I speak for all of us when I say, fuck you, Joshua.
Senator Sanders. That was really uncalled for. Senator Sanders, I'm gonna have to ask you to yield the floor. We're not allowed to use that sort of invective against our own fans.
Well, this is off the record, Adam Felber. This is
We're recording this. No, yeah.
Adam, if you could just once again stick your head out the window, maybe tell us.
There was never a time that I did that, Senator Sanders.
Tell us where North is. That could be instructive at this point.
I know where North is. Tony, is there anything else at the bottom
There's
of that mailbag?
There's one more from Maria Caswell. Hello, all. I keep wondering if at the beginning of the Odyssey, that is NLTPP, as they were laughing happily off mic in the studio near Roger Federer's appliance store, Bonnie and Tony would ever have thought that they would have major speaking roles on the show. Would they ever even have agreed to it? Burning question these days, Maria Caswell.
Well, that's an interesting question. Tony and Bonnie, did you guys envision yourselves, you know, kind of, you know, working your way into an important role, speaking role on the show?
No.
No.
Well,
I think I speak for both Tony and Bonnie.
You don't have to, Senator Sanders. What I said, let him speak.
No, was
let him speak. Let him speak.
It was a dream come true for both of them. a long held ambition. And I remember how they wept on that first night.
They wept.
They wept. They did. They
with
wept.
Happiness. At being
yes,
on our show.
I believe yeah. It was happiness at the time.
That is not how I remember it, but okay.
You don't recall because your head was, and I'm going to say this as nicely as I can.
Or just
your
not at all.
Your head was out the window.
God. All right. I'm going to officially bring to a close this edition of Mailbag. Insider Edition. Okay. Hey, nobody.
That was great, Tony. Thank you so much. Those were excellent letters.
They
Thank
were.
You, listeners.
Yep.
I was out of the room for a minute, but...
Senator Sanders kind of had it covered. Don't worry about it.
Oh, gosh. He's such a brilliant man.
He's a blowhard. Hey, nobodies, if you have questions or comments, you want to bitch about how we run our book club or something like that, send it to nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Paula Poundstone, what is going on in the Poundstone product empire, or as I like to call it, PPE, this week?
Adam, the success of Poundstone Industries, also known as Lipstick Nancy Incorporated, comes largely from the fact that we are like a family.
Fuck that! I hate you!
If listeners go to paulapoundstone.com, they can purchase a Poundstone Pussy Pillow, which is a 4-inch by 5-inch catnip-filled pillow with a cat joke on one side and autographed to your cat on the other side. Well, not to your cat, Adam. Autographed to the purchaser's cat on the other side. Also, the weather is warming up, so listeners are going to need their tri-polyblend t-shirt with a self-portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back. They come in baseball and standard styles. I would tell you more, but Heidi.
I hear you. But I want to remind listeners that we just launched our new contest, The Longest Cat. Once again, if you can figure out which of our cats has the longest name, the one with the highest number of letters, you will be entered in a drawing to win the big prize, a Zoom call with all your friends and me and Paula. Once again, that address to go to is bit.ly/NLTPPcontest421.
Couldn't be easier.
Tony, that is
I don't see how we could have made it easier.
Such a catchy address. I don't know how anybody's going to forget it.
I'm sorry.
Subscribe to this podcast. It's free. You'll get it every week at no charge. If there's a subject or topic that you want to know about, well, tell us. We're at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Once again, that's a very memorable address. nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Note the lack of abbreviations or numbers. That's our show, everybody. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam L. Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Dr. Christina McRae. Yeah, thanks to our house band, Adam Fisher. Woo! Visit him at adamfisher.ck.page. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Intern is Carly Patron, mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by Land Romo. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at transcribeme.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
We want to dedicate this show to the memory of Jason Smith, the CEO of Starburns Audio. If you'd like to leave some well wishes or donate to the GoFundMe campaign for his daughter's college fund, you can find the link on our Facebook page. So, there was a lot of censure happening tonight.
Oh my gosh. There was censure of the censures.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I gotta say, Adam, you are really a master of the Roberts Rules of Order. It's like you've internalized them.
Oh yeah, you know, I've even read about them.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
in high
so
school,
clear.
Yeah. That comes across, doesn't it? Yeah, I really.
Is that how you run like your dinner table, for example?
Oh yeah, my entire house runs on Roberts Rules of Order.
Yeah. Bob's rules. Boy, there's
Bob's rules.
Nothing like them. Bob's rules.
That's what I say around the house. Bob's rules are the highway.
Yeah. You know what rule number two in Bob's rules is?
What's that?
Let Betty speak.
Scarpins Avenue, a podcast network.